Welcome to Doc Talk. Today is episode number 23, and we are here again with Dr. Brandon Archuleta. He is a 2006 graduate of the United States Military Academy, and he earned his PhD from the University of Texas at Austin in government with specific subfields in public policy and American politics. So if you didn't hear last week's show, definitely go back and listen to that, because we started talking a bit about his book before we ended, and you're going to want to know the, kind of like the backstory to all of that. You definitely want to hear that because it makes today's episode all the more interesting. That being said, you don't have to listen to that one first. You can start today if you're just joining us. So stick around and let's hear from Dr. Archuleta about his book publishing tips, how he selected the press, the printing press that he selected, how he selected an editor, his tips on selecting an editor. And he also gives a shout out to the University of Texas at Austin for their military history and American politics tracks. So let's jump in and hear what Dr. Archuleta has to share today.
Welcome to Doc Talk, where we discuss all things doctoral. Been there, done that? Then we want to hear from you. Want to be there? Want to do that? Then this is the place to be. Still trying to figure it all out? Yeah, so am I. So come on, let's do this. Let's venture beyond a master's.
I'll definitely put the link to your, well, the title of your book in the show notes so that folks can go and check out the actual title and don't have to try to remember, scribble it down. So yes, everybody go check the show notes for, let's see, can I say that? Let's see. Let me go back and look for the title of Dr. Archuleta's book, 20 Years of Service, The Politics and Military Pension Policy and the Long Road to Reform, published by the University Press of Kansas.
Yeah.
And I'm in Kansas, actually. Is it actually the University of Kansas's press?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay.
So the University Press of Kansas is in Lawrence.
Uh-huh.
And it's a consortium press. So all of the Kansas State universities, or I should say public universities in Kansas, work through the University Press of Kansas.
How did you choose them?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. So I had gotten a lot of encouragement from my dissertation committee throughout the process that we think this is a book. You know, you should not lose sight of that. And so as you're writing the dissertation, think about writing for a book audience. And there's a lot of work that's got to go from adapting the dissertation manuscript into a book manuscript. But but if you've got that in the back of your mind that you hope that this is a book and lots of people think that this is a book, that gives you the sort of the encouragement to continue through the work. And so I got to the point where the manuscript was nearly complete, and I started reaching out to various presses. And I had initial interest from a couple of presses that said, when the manuscript is complete, come back to us and let us know. For one reason or another, you know, one press actually closed that particular series. And so the editors wrote back to me and said, hey, we really were looking forward to it, but we've closed this series and it's an editorial decision and best of luck finding a home for your manuscript. Another press wrote to me and said, hey, we've taken a different editorial direction and we're not looking for, niche research issues. We're looking for more grand politics, which was fine. And so I just was persistent and leveraged my academic network and I wrote to several presses and shared my prospectus with them. I had gotten a lot of encouragement to consider the University Press of Kansas from my dissertation chair, Brian Jones, because they tend to do great work in military history and American politics. And then he'd also recommended a couple of others, Cornell and Michigan, also have great presses. And I was fortunate that I had interest from all three of those presses, among others. And what drew me to Kansas ultimately was my book fit their catalog. As I said, they have a great track record in military history and American politics, which is sort of right where my book is. Had this interesting nexus in defense policy, and there's lots of military history to it. There's lots of American politics to it. And the other piece of advice I got was, you're choosing an editor who's essentially a project manager, and the editor has to share your vision for the book. And if the editor has different ideas about the book, or is, vastly different ideas, or strikes you as unreliable, then you ought to find somebody else. And so my acquisitions editor at Kansas, David Congdon, was absolutely terrific. He shared my vision for the book. We met, we had made plans to meet at an academic conference in Chicago, before I submitted the manuscript to him. And, he immediately had ideas about the artwork. He had thoughts about, the audience. He had thoughts about the structure of the book, you know, so he really had great notes, which were terrific. He had clearly thought about it. He'd come prepared. He'd been responsive throughout the process. Kansas was a good fit for my title, and ultimately I thought that was a great fit for me. So I signed the book contract with Kansas, and they were, absolutely terrific. I think from submission of the manuscript to publication was maybe 16 months, and that's pretty standard in academic publishing, and I felt like it was a seamless process, and they were a terrific organization. So I would highly recommend the University Press of Kansas to any scholars who are working on military history or American politics.
Oh yeah, that's a great great tip there. Great plug for them. Good thing they did good work, right?
yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Shout out. So let's see here. Your book. Oh, a question about your book that I have. So you published it in 2020. Is it August? Yeah.
August of 2020.
Yeah. Now, I'm just curious to know, what was that like trying to get things done after the virus influenced shutdowns? I mean, how did we're here by Fort Leavenworth and they closed the entire Carl Library. You know, the Combined Arms Research Library was just like shut. Like you couldn't even drop books off in the bin when we first started. So you have these books checked out and you couldn't even put them in the bin to like the external bin to return them. They were off limits. At a point they opened it up so you can go in and reserve books and they'd have them for you and the kids could pick their little books up and then you'd leave, but you didn't get to hang out in there. And that's a huge deal. I mean, I haven't been using that library for anything scholarly since 2013-14, but it's a major resource center. And I was just thinking about you and trying to finish a book and things being closed. And how did that go?
Yeah. So I finished the manuscript, Christmas of 20, Christmas of 2018.
And wow.
Then I submitted, manuscript in, March of 2019. So by the time the pandemic here hit, March of 2020, I was in the midst of the editorial process, the late editorial stage. So the challenge there was, the folks at Kansas, what was their, work schedule like? What was their battle rhythm? And it turned out that they were mostly open throughout the initial stages of the pandemic. And I think they didn't hit a shutdown until much later.
Okay.
But they continued working and we stayed on track and maintained our timeline. So fortunately, my work was complete soon enough that I wasn't impacted. But, you know, folks who are in PhD programs now, especially people who are looking to do archival work, as I did, I spent a lot of time at the National Archives and Library of Congress in Washington. People who are looking to do that same sort of archival work are really, really up against a tight deadline because they're not going to be able to do their archival work this year. You know, who knows what next summer is going to look like when a lot of scholars go out to do their archival work. So I really feel for them. And there are just only so many records that have been digitized. You've really got to get into the archives and you know, you got to feel it and touch it with your hands and do the hard, painstaking work, you know, by candlelight, so to speak, to find what you're looking for sometimes. So there are a lot of folks who are going to be really, really up against it because they will have lost this summer, this year of archival research.
Yeah, it's impacted a lot. Yeah. Wow. So where are you from originally? At first I was thinking, oh, maybe he picked Kansas because he's from there. Or but where do you hail from?
No, I'm Dr. originally Archuleta. From Los Angeles, California.
Okay. Okay. So you're on the opposite side of the country from...
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Coast to coast. Wow. You have a claim to fame at West Point.
Oh, do I?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you do. I think you do. You were the first... To the best of our knowledge, I think you're the first.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Can you? I would like you to share that. That's a big deal.
Yeah. So I am president of the West Point class of 2006, and so far as I know, the first Mexican American class president in Academy history. You know, the Academy didn't start letting in Latinos or Hispanics, I think, until the class of the first graduate may have been from Puerto Rico in the class of 1915, the class of the Stars Fell Upon.
Oh.
So I looking over the course of the Academy's history, I have not been able to find another Mexican-American. I believe there have been other, there was a cadet who preceded me who was Portuguese-American.
Okay.
So I'm careful not to say the first Hispanic-American, but I believe I'm the first Mexican-American class president in Academy history.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's
it's a real honor to serve and represent my classmates, and I'm privileged to do it to this day.
Yeah. So yeah, because I guess you could have, some people, I don't want to say give up because it sounds like you just get somebody gave up, but sometimes people turn over their presidency, their class presidency, right, to someone else. If
That's
something
right.
comes up, even if they're still living and serving circumstances, but you're still since 2000, when did you start? When do you?
I was elected in 2002.
Yeah, early.
Class president for quite some time. Yeah. elected in 2002 and then reelected thereafter. We had my class had our 10-year reunion in 2016, and we raised $710,000 to give back to the Academy, which was more money than any 10-year reunion class in Academy history.
Wow.
So my classmates have been. Just a terrific network of friends and we're just a tight knit group, I think, as many West Point classes are. But I think our class's claim to fame is that we're the first class to come into the Academy after 9/11. And, we're also the smallest class, I think, in a generation because we only graduated we came in with about 1200 cadets as most, classes do. And we graduated with, I think, 868.
That's less than mine. 01, yeah. We were 9. And the only reason I'm pretty sure I could be misquoting, but I don't think my memory is failing me. I think we were 901. I could be wrong, but the only reason I remember that is because our goat, and for folks listening, a goat is like the derogatory term for the person who graduated like by the skin of their teeth. Like they performed
last in the class.
There you go. They performed just well enough not to fail out, and well enough to stay in. And the tradition is that when that person crosses, when their name is called and that person crosses the stage to receive their diploma, they are honored. They are everybody. They're like a celebrity, and everybody in the class has given $1 to that person. And I recall, I think it was like $901. This guy earned.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So a goat, and you know, a lot of us know that the goat is the mascot for the United States Military Academy or Naval Academy. Ooh, I shouldn't have said that. United States Naval Academy are the goats. So hence, you know, the last person in the class is the goat.
Yeah. I mean, I think we had normal attrition in so many respects, you know, plebes who leave the Academy and honor issues for firsties. And so that happens to all the classes. But I think what was different about our class is that, as we were going into our cow summer in 2004, the war in Iraq was really, really raging. And I think a lot of our classmates, for one reason or another, decided that was time to leave because they realized that maybe military service wasn't for them. Wartime military service wasn't for them. And, you know, everyone makes their own decisions and it is what it is, but we graduated with a small class and I couldn't be more proud of the group of individuals that I'm, you know, that I will forever be, you know, associated with as a member of the class of 2006.
That's excellent. And you know, as a president of the class, I know what my president does for our class. So I know it seems to be another job, you know?
Yeah, it definitely can be another job, especially during reunion season. So my class is coming up on our 15-year reunion in 2021. And so we'll be gearing up. We've already assembled the reunion committee and we'll be convening over Zoom in the coming year.
Man, maybe that's where I met you. Did I meet you at your all's reunion down at the tent on Buffalo Soldier Field?
That might have been it. Yeah.
Yeah.
We were there for our 5 years. So yeah, you must have been there for your 10 years.
I was just trying to think. I think I met the Castle family.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Anyway, they were friends of Kirsten's and Scott's. And okay. The only reason the name comes to mind is because they had just come back from, I think, overseas. Like, but I'd just seen their name. And so I thought I'd throw that out there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think that could have very well been it.
Certainly your sister Kirsten may have made the introduction too.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. This has been really neat. Dr. Archuleta, thank you so much for being here. And you know, what's really cool. It's kind of like the goosebump kind of thing. Like, you know, I am talking to Dr. Archuleta, who's going to be like the Secretary of State or something soon. You know what I mean? Like in the future, I can go back and be like, oh my gosh, I talked to him when he, you know, finished this, and this, and he was working on this, and how cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I think it's more likely that I'll be Lieutenant Colonel retired than Secretary of State or something.
But, hey, who knows?
One way or another. Yeah, that's okay.
Who knows? And you know, if it's not that, that's fine, right? But if it is, I can say that I had you on the show.
Oh, that's too kind. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Allison.
Yeah, that's great. Well, any last anything else that you would like to share that I didn't touch on, and you would like, or just like, oh, I think they need to know this, or.
Well, I would just say that people ought to know that pursuing a PhD is an arduous journey, but it's enriching and fulfilling. It can be totally worth it, but you really have to know yourself and ask whether or not this is for you, because it's okay if it's not. And then people shouldn't let others set their expectations for them, that anything that's worth earning or achieving in life comes with great heartache and struggle and perseverance, and others shouldn't set your expectations. If you aspire to a doctorate, then find a way to do it and throw yourself into it wholeheartedly. And when it's all said and done, you'll be very proud of your accomplishments, and that you'll be all the better for it.
Excellent. Well, hey, I just want to say thank you again, Dr. Archuleta, and say it for me. How do you say your last name?
Archuleta. Yeah, you've got it.
Did I do it right? Okay, cool. I'm a French major. I speak French. So it's funny. Sometimes Lauren will tease me. She said in the past, you're speaking Spanish. Like you sound like you're speaking French when you speak Spanish. Like the whole thing's all off, you know? Archuleta. Okay, Dr.
Yeah, and the funny thing, chuleta in Spanish is like a pork chop. Like a chop of meat.
Okay.
In high school, I was often teased called the pork chop.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Chuleta. So, what about the prefix, the ar?
I'm not sure. In the Spanish, the name Archuleta actually has nothing to do with meat. I think it's something about a tree. Like Basque Spanish origins, because Archuleta is not a Mexican name; it's a Spanish name.
What do you call it? Is Spain considered part of the Iberian Peninsula?
I guess,
with Portugal, yeah. Spain, yeah. Mm-hmm. Archuleta. Okay, I gotta go look that up.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for having me, Allison. This has been terrific.
Yeah, it's been fun. I'm glad we were able to work it out.
Thank you. Well, I look forward to hearing it. So let me know when it's out.
Definitely will. And I trust that you had a Merry Christmas, and I want to wish you and your family, Tiffany, and the boys a Happy New Year.
Yeah, thanks. Happy New Year to you too. I appreciate it.
Okay, bye.
This is your host, Allison Marchin, and I'm so glad you were here. And I'm looking forward to the next time. Let's do this again.